Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Lou, Bill, Tupac, and Mitchell.
Hello. I was surprised to receive a number of calls and letters during the last 2 weeks from irate citizens who were angry and frightened about what Bill Clinton said in a speech to graduating seniors at Portland State University in Oregon on June 13th. The fastest zipper in the West told his audience, and that included television viewers all over America, that we must not do anything to slow the flow of immigrants from the third world into the United States. He denounced as wrong-headed those white Americans who fear that, quote, the America they know and love is becoming a foreign land, end of quote. That is a wrong-headed view of third world immigration, Clinton said. Instead, we must welcome more diversity. More diversity will be good for us, he said. Anyway, he gloated, there's nothing you can do to stop it. The white majority in America will become a minority within the next 50 years. So get used to it, you wrong-headed bigots. The white America you knew and loved will become non-white. And to try to oppose this transformation of America, this darkening of America, this de-Europeanization of America, Clinton said, is, and I quote, more than wrong. It is un-American, end of quote. That's right. Monica Lewinsky's boyfriend, the Tsar of Whitewater, the mad groper and fondler of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the principal American benefactor of the Chinese missile industry, is telling us that we are un-American for not wanting to become a minority in our own land. Now, I said that I was surprised that a number of people contacted me after Clinton gave this speech at Portland State University, and they were angry and agitated about what he had said. I was surprised at this reaction because I've been telling everyone for the past 5 years that Clinton is doing everything he can to make the United States a non-white country. And the people who contacted me after the Portland State University speech acted as if they had heard this for the first time. I believe that many of our listeners think that I exaggerate the seriousness of our situation, and so they discount about half of the things I say. I guess that this is because the economy in the United States is still relatively strong. And as long as most people have a full refrigerator and can make the monthly payments on their credit cards, they can't believe that things really are catastrophically bad. They think I'm just being colorful when I say that Bill Clinton is a constitutional psychopath, an indictable criminal, and a piece of filth, and that the fact that he was elected President of the United States twice is justification for an armed rising by every patriot. They think I'm exaggerating. But you know, I'm not exaggerating at all. If anything, I understate things. All that's new is that Clinton was feeling his oats when he spoke at Portland State 2 weeks ago and blurted out his hatred for white America and his intention to destroy us a little more forthrightly than he usually does. It was this openness on Clinton's part which alarmed people. They had heard me telling them what Clinton was up to, but they only half believed me. When they heard Clinton admit it himself, they believed it. Well, thank you for that, Mr. Clinton. You know, one of the things which galled me most about Clinton's speech was his dragging the Irish into it. He said that our objections to having more Haitians and Chinamen and Vietnamese and Mexicans in our country is akin to the unwillingness of some of the early English immigrants to America to accept the later Irish immigrants. Baloney. My Irish ancestors may not always have gotten along with my Scottish and English ancestors, either in this country or back in Europe, just as the Scots and the English didn't always get along either. But that has nothing to do with the united opposition of all sane and healthy white Americans to turning their country over to a non-white majority. I'll tell you something else that Clinton did the same day he gave that speech at Portland State. He went to the high school in Springfield, Oregon, where one of the recent school killing sprees took place, and he spoke piously to the survivors about how he felt their pain and about his determination to bring an end to the epidemic of school violence which has been plaguing the country. He put on a show of real concern for the two students who had been killed and the 22 who had been wounded at Springfield's Thurston High School. He bemoaned the culture of violence which incites young students to kill. Then, right after his talk to the students, teachers, and parents at Thurston High School, right after his pious moaning about the culture of violence which causes school shootings, Clinton hopped on to Air Force One and flew to Los Angeles, where he was the guest of honor at a lavish party in the mansion of Hollywood record mogul Lou Wasserman. All of the other big Hollywood Jewish media bosses were there too. The purpose of the party was to raise donations for the Democratic Party, and the Clintonistas were expecting close to $1 million in donations from Wasserman and the other media bosses at the party. Now remember, Mr. Clinton arrived at this party and gave Mr. Wasserman a big hug just a few hours after his teary speech at Thurston High School, where a 15-year-old student had blown away 24 of his schoolmates. Lou Wasserman, Mr. Clinton's host, is the chairman emeritus of MCA, the giant record company, which is the world's principal promoter and distributor of the musical genre known as gangsta rap. For those of you who don't already know this, gangsta rap has lyrics glorifying the lifestyle of black gangsters and drug bosses. It glorifies street shootings and other aspects of black criminality. Its rap lyrics are very graphic about murder and rape, which it promotes as being very cool and fashionable. Gangsta rap has been pushed hard by Wasserman and other big media Jews in an effort to get white kids hooked on black culture and black lifestyles. It fits right in with Mr. Clinton's efforts to eliminate white racism by getting whites to accept blacks and other aspects of diversity. To be more specific, Lou Wasserman's MCA owns Interscope Records and a number of other record labels. One of Interscope's featured performers, until he was himself killed in a drive-by shooting in Las Vegas last year, was the black gangster rapper Tupac Shakur. Do you remember the schoolyard shooting in Jonesboro, Arkansas, in March, when two young gunmen killed four of their schoolmates and a teacher? One of the killers was 13-year-old Mitchell Johnson. 13 years old, and he murdered five people in cold blood. How could it happen? Everybody was asking. Well, Mitchell Johnson's English teacher, Debbie Pelly, told the world how she thought it happened, but apparently not many people were listening because her answer was politically inconvenient, if not politically incorrect. The Jonesboro English teacher had noted that Mitchell Johnson's behavior began changing in the months before the shooting when he began listening to gangster rap. He became addicted to the music, his teacher said, when she told a U.S. Senate committee in Washington about it. I quote, Mitchell brought this music to school with him, listened to it on the bus, tried listening to it in classes. He was far more into this music than anyone else his friends knew. End of quote. Young Mitchell Johnson's favorite rapper was Tupac Shakur. The CDs that Mitchell brought to school and listened to on the school bus were sold to him by Lou Wasserman's company. Mitchell's teacher told the U.S. Senate that the 13-year-old white boy would sing along to the lyrics as he listened to the black rapper. Lyrics about, quote, coming to school and killing all the kids, end of quote. To Debbie Pelley, who saw the transformation of Mitchell Johnson with her own eyes, and who was lucky not to have been shot when the 13-year-old did, in fact, come to school and begin killing all the kids, it's perfectly clear what made the impressionable boy think it would be cool to shoot his schoolmates. Did Bill Clinton not know what Debbie Pelley knew? Did Bill Clinton not know that she placed the blame for the massacre squarely on the influence that gangster rap had on Mitchell Johnson? Had Bill Clinton's advisors not told him that the boy's favorite rapper was Tupac Shakur? Was Bill Clinton unaware that Lou Wasserman's company produced and distributed Tupac Shakur's music about coming to school and killing all the kids? I think not. I think he was aware of it, but he figured that the general public wasn't, and so he could get away with going to Lou Wasserman's party and hugging Lou Wasserman and accepting money from Lou Wasserman just a few hours after telling the parents at Thurston High School in Springfield, Oregon, that he felt their pain over the shootings there and that he was determined to do everything he could to end the culture of violence which led to such shootings. He figured he could get away with it because Lou Wasserman's fellow Jewish media bosses wouldn't call him to account for it. I guess he figured right, didn't he? Now, do you understand why I say that I am not exaggerating at all when I refer to Bill Clinton as an unspeakable piece of filth and describe his presence in the White House as clear evidence that we need an armed revolution in America? Do you understand what a dangerous situation our country and our children are in as long as the system that put Bill Clinton in the White House remains in place? I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The reason we need a revolution in America is not that Bill Clinton is a liar and a hypocrite. That's true of every politician in Washington and has been for a long time. We don't need to be especially concerned that Bill Clinton is a groper and a fondler and that he solicits oral sex from 21-year-old White House interns and then lies about it and tells others to lie about it. We don't even need to be especially concerned that Bill Clinton is a thief and a swindler and a solicitor of bribes. We can live with a perjurer in the White House and a suborner of perjury and an obstructor of justice. We can survive these things. The country can survive them. We can even survive having in the White House a politician so rotten, so crooked, and so cynical that he can put on a big pretense of sympathizing with the parents of children wounded or slain in a schoolyard shooting and denounce the culture of violence which led to the shooting while knowing that in a few hours he will be embracing one of the principal promoters of that culture of violence and accepting money from him. No. Bill Clinton's real crimes, his unforgivable crimes, are none of these things. Bill Clinton's real crimes, the crimes that justify a revolution, are the things he confessed to in his speech at Portland State University. Bill Clinton admits to having policies intended to make America less white. He admits to working for a non-white majority in America. He admits to combating any effort by whites to protect their culture or their race or to keep America from becoming a non-white country. He boasts about these things, and he encourages impressionable young people to accept these things, to cheer him for these things, to join him in promoting these things. Bill Clinton's real crime is not perjury. It's genocide. The reason he is a disaster for America is not that he takes bribes or that he stole money in his Whitewater escapade. It's that he is stealing our children's future. Listen to this. If Bill Clinton has his way, America will become a non-white country within the next 50 years. That is, during your children's lifetime. Racial mixing and miscegenation will continue increasing, and our race eventually will become extinct. That's what Bill Clinton is planning. That's what he's working toward. That's what he's trying to sell to impressionable young Americans. That's what he's trying to make seem fashionable, what he's trying to make seem cool. Genocide, racial suicide. While his good buddy and financial backer Lou Wasserman promotes schoolyard massacres by selling gangster rap to children, Bill Clinton promotes the annihilation of our race. So that's the situation we're facing. Genocide, the annihilation of our race. I've been thinking of explaining a little about the background of this situation, about how and why we got into it. But I believe I'll save that for another program and talk a bit now about what we ought to do about our situation. I said a few minutes ago that Bill Clinton's presence in the White House is justification for an armed rising. That doesn't mean that I want individual patriots to begin shooting at the White House now. It's too soon for that. That wouldn't accomplish what we want now. It would just play into our enemies' hands by frightening the couch potatoes into accepting even more limitations of their freedom. An armed revolution is morally justified, but it is not yet strategically justified. We still have a big educational job to do first. And we need to do this job at several levels. We need to educate the couch potatoes as well as people with broader horizons, people who care about the future as well as the present. The couch potatoes may not be capable of becoming indignant about Mr. Clinton's plan to make America non-white. That's too big and too distant for them to get their minds around. But even the Joe and Jill six-packs ought to be able to understand and be angry about his cynicism in weeping publicly about schoolyard shootings in the afternoon and then hugging the principal promoter of schoolyard shootings in the evening. Schoolyard shootings they can understand. Tupac Shakur's lyrics they can understand. The influence of those lyrics on Mitchell Johnson in Jonesboro they can understand just as well as Mitchell Johnson's English teacher could. And Bill Clinton's cozy relationship with Lou Wasserman they can understand. It's all tied together into a very pretty package. Of course, the controlled media won't tie it together so the couch potatoes can see the whole picture. But I've just done that for you. You can do the same thing in talking to people you know. You can paint the same picture in letters to the editor of your local newspaper. You can explain it in detail on your favorite radio call-in show. People can understand that. And when they do understand it, many of them will be angry. As for the people with broader horizons, the bright and perceptive people in our universities, in our professions, among our business leaders. And you know, there are some of these people who still do have a moral sense, a sense of racial responsibility. You should reach out to these people too. Many of them are just as concerned and angry as you are about Bill Clinton's plans for the destruction of our race. What they need is encouragement. What they need to know is that they aren't alone. What they need to know is that there are many other bright and capable and idealistic people willing to work together to derail Bill Clinton's nightmare program for a mulatto America. What they need is to see and hear other people who are not afraid to speak out. These people have never been more ready than now to accept your hand if you reach out to them. They understand the urgency of our situation as well as you do. When Bill Clinton goes public with his plans, the way he did at Portland State University 2 weeks ago, in his effort to recruit the trendier airheads for his program of genocide, he also alerts decent and thoughtful people. He helps them snap out of their fog and understand the reality and the urgency of what we must deal with. That's why I got a lot of agitated letters and calls from listeners after Clinton's speech at Portland State. As I promised, on future broadcasts, I'll explain more about what's behind Bill Clinton's nightmare program for the continued darkening of America. But you don't have to wait for that. What you can do now is talk to everyone you know about the things I've just told you. Use every medium available to you. Use the internet. Use your telephone. Use radio and newspapers. More and more people are ready to respond. So don't be afraid. Speak out. Explain. Recruit. Thanks for being with me again today.